preface, against the grain. In the life and death business of vascular surgery, there is no room to make any mistakes. So I always took my work seriously, to say the least. In fact, by the time I became chief of vascular surgery at New York's Montefiore Medical Center and Albert Einstein College of Medicine, my exacting standards had earned me a dubious nickname. To some residents and junior staff, I was ominously known as the White Shark, an intimidating presence who was constructively critical to a fault. As one of the most prominent trainees remarked, in those days, he lived up to his nickname. He would bite your head off before you could yell, "Get out of the water." But I never really saw myself that way. True, in my role as teacher and mentor, I had to be strict in and out of the operating room, more attuned to a patient's needs than a young doctor's feelings. I would painstakingly watch and correct every throw of an anastomotic stitch until it was perfect. The demands of my role required total confidence and an assertive personality. Yet years earlier, as a medical student at Cornell and later as a resident at Harvard and the Peter Bent Brigham Hospital, the Brigham, I was anything but a shark. I was more of a minnow, extremely shy. I was someone who listened carefully, worried a lot, and was somewhat intimidated by my superiors. I rarely asked questions. I never volunteered. Instead, I would sit in the back of the auditorium and hope that I would never get called on. Many of us felt like enlisted men in the service, total subordinates to the senior surgeons, never dreaming that some among us would one day step into their shoes. But as my enchantment with vascular surgery surged, my devotion to the field evolved into a lifelong obsession. By the time I was in the Army, given the opportunity to do numerous operations on my own, my shyness quickly subsided. And by the time I was the chief resident at the Brigham, my confidence matched my responsibility. Somehow, I had grown into being someone I never expected. As Maya Angelou once said, "If you are always trying to be normal, you will never know how amazing you can be." I truly believe that. In medicine, there are physicians who lead conventional lives, going with the flow, following the traditional path of seeing patients, making appearances at medical conferences, writing a paper or two, and playing golf or tennis on the weekends. But there are others who become iconoclasts, who go against the grain and challenge current wisdom. They put their necks on the line to defy the predictable and strike out in innovative ways. As pioneers, they tackle challenges that others have either fumbled or thought were impossible. That's what this book is all about, going against the grain, often overcoming resistance or fighting back against opposition from some of the dangerous beasts that populate the medical jungle. To do this, you must think outside the box rather than following the herd. You must not bend to the other people's notions of how things should be done. You don't simply follow existing protocols or guidelines. You're a leader. You're a nonconformist. You have to survive and function in an often hostile, jungle-like environment. That was me, trying to get people to realize that the impossible was possible. And as you'll read, I have paid for that in some distressing ways. There were many days when I was greeted with skepticism, disdain, and professional jealousy. At times, I was even ridiculed and deemed a crazy man. Yet most of the things I advocated later became the standard of care, particularly true with lung transplantation, transformational limb salvage, and endovascular procedures. For decades, it was a struggle to get funding, support, or peer approval for our innovations. That was true particularly at Montefiore Medical Center in the Bronx, which was dwarfed by more prestigious institutions like the Mayo Clinic, Massachusetts General Hospital, Columbia Presbyterian Medical Center, the Brigham, or Johns Hopkins. Yet through it all, we somehow managed to turn Montefiore into a mecca for vascular surgery that superseded other institutions. How? By leading an aggressive approach to limb salvage and becoming the first vascular physician group in the U.S. to perform less invasive endovascular aortic aneurysm repair. This breakthrough, a total team effort, made it possible to treat or replace any medium-sized or large artery in the body in a brand new way. And when we did it, there were many who attacked us out of disbelief or jealousy. As you'll see, there were witch hunts and hidden agendas, storylines that were positively Shakespearean. I would hear back-channel chatter from competing hospitals, This guy is nuts. He's a maverick working at a third-rate institution in the Bronx. How is he going to accomplish that? As you will read, the experience of all this backbiting taught me some crucial lessons about the less attractive aspects of human nature. I saw resentment born of competition led to cruelty and poor decisions. I was, at times, astonished and admittedly hurt by furtive efforts of others to thwart our worthy pursuits, just because competing factions wanted to get the credit or get ahead. I learned that the best way to deal with all the ugly qualities of professional jealousy is to shut them out and continue your mission, no matter what. So, over 6 decades as a vascular surgeon, I kept pushing forward in my research and experimentation, authoring more than 1,000 original articles and chapters in medical journals and books that maintained forward momentum. True, I could have gone into private practice, following the path of other surgeons who were making millions of dollars. Instead, I was committed to an academic career, accepting less money to do what I thought was right for me. I wanted to make a difference. And that's where this story begins. In the pages ahead, there are 6 primary areas that form the pillars of our story. Landmarks in my medical career that I consider unusual. These are experiences that I hope may inspire others to explore new ground, no matter what their profession. First, you will read about my 15-year mission to overcome the major obstacles that prevented lung transplantation from being a practical therapeutic treatment. We had to confute the notion that the lung was the poor sister of transplantation, that the procedure was fated to fail. Traditionally, a lung taken out of a donor was thought to have a high level of vascular resistance in the recipient, for reasons to be discussed. But in our protocols, we created a surgical technique that allowed normal blood flow at a low level of vascular resistance in the recipient, making single lung transplant in a variety of conditions totally feasible. You'll see how our work was ultimately blocked by the impossibility of getting donor lungs in New York City because vying institutions refused to share them. Ultimately, though, we made human lung transplantation a reality, performing 7 single lung transplants in desperately ill patients. Second, you will see how I devoted a huge amount of my time to saving lower limbs that were afflicted with gangrene, cases that would require a major amputation in other institutions. The wisdom of the day in the late 60s and 70s was that any surgical attempt to improve the blood supply to a gangrenous foot caused more harm than good. As such, lower limbs with toe or foot gangrene due to poor blood supply were routinely treated by below-knee amputation. But we challenged that widely held assumption and developed all sorts of techniques for treating those threatened limbs, eventually saving over 90% of them. Yet when we presented our results to prestigious learned societies, they believed that those guys in the Bronx were unhinged or that we were not presenting the data accurately. Today, almost all of our techniques have been proven successful and are in general use worldwide. Third, as I mentioned, we were the first to repair aneurysms as well as obstructed arteries with less invasive endovascular procedures that did not require open operations. Everybody thought we were out of our minds on that one, too. But our breakthrough came in 1992, when, in partnership with Juan Perotti, an Argentinian vascular surgeon, we performed the first endovascular repair of an aneurysm of the aorta in the U.S. It was accomplished with a surgeon-made endovascular graft placed within the blood vessel. The same technique also allowed us to effectively treat most ruptured aortic aneurysms, as well as other arterial obstructions and injuries, such as stab or gunshot wounds. I am proud to say that our initial procedures created an endovascular revolution that spread throughout the world. Today, 85% to 90% of all blood vessel pathology is treated endovascularly, a technique we originally promoted against intense opposition. Fourth, and most controversially, you will read about how I led the fight to make vascular surgery a distinct and independent specialty. Traditionally, the field of vascular surgery was a subordinate or subservient subspecialty within a department of general or cardiac surgery. In this arrangement, vascular surgery was the poor sister, having to appeal to our fathers in the parent department to get needed resources like staff, space, money, and equipment. As endovascular techniques evolved, my belief was that we deserved our own separate specialty niche. Why? because general surgeons simply didn't perform procedures on blood vessels as well as committed vascular surgery specialists did. Inevitably, we produced far better results and lower mortality rates, which justified our being an independent specialty. In the late 90s and early 2000s, a few colleagues and I pushed hard for independence within the structure of U.S. medicine. We also lobbied Congress and generated significant media attention with published articles in the Wall Street Journal and elsewhere. Our activism was divisive within vascular surgery and opposed by many. The position that we advocated was deemed revolutionary and against the grain of established organized medical specialization. Despite a passionate effort to assert our independence, we sadly lost the fight. This was due to strong opposition from General Surgery and its American Board of Surgery, ABS, and the American Board of Medical Specialties, ABMS, an unfair, self-serving, cartel-like structure in U.S. organized medicine. We were also opposed by some individuals in our own specialty, those who valued career advancement over what was best for patients and vascular surgery as a vocation. Bottom line, after a 30-year career at Montefiore that was successful in every way, academically, clinically, and financially, in terms of patients attracted, research achievements, and grants procured, I was terminated because of my efforts to challenge and change the structure of organized medicine, which I've come to think of as the medical equivalent of the Sicilian Mafia, to establish a new independent specialty. To this day, the fight goes on, and regrettably, the same dominance of self-interest over patient and specialty interests still appears to be operative. Fifth, I will tell you about how and why I led the development of the so-called VEETH Symposium, an international continuing medical education event that provides vascular surgeons and all vascular specialists with updates on the latest advances, changing concepts and diagnosis, pressing controversies, and new techniques. It all began in the early 1970s when I helped Dr. Henry Haimovici start a small meeting in New York that attracted less than 100 attendees. After a few years, I took over and expanded this program. I was fortunate as vascular surgery grew and matured as a specialty. The event exploded in size and importance. Today, the VEETH Symposium is arguably the largest vascular meeting in the world, attracting approximately 5,000 attendees annually. Sixth, but not least, you will read about what I considered my biggest career achievement, my commitment to mentorship and career promotion of others. For anyone in a leadership position, giving back is a huge gift and responsibility. Through all the advancements described here, it was never, ever a one-man show. My colleagues at Montefiore were a band of brothers and sisters, like a Marine company who always stood up for one another, even when we were demeaned by jealous superiors or ill-motivated administrators. We shared everything, both the blame and the credit. When you're a leader, you have to make other people great. It has to be we, not me. It was a tradition that the renowned heart surgeon Michael DeBakey always practiced as he mentioned his surgical trainees from around the world. Promoting colleagues in the end always promotes you. I became driven to make my associates successful, not only by training them, but by advancing their careers with sharing of lead authorship on articles and financial rewards, the distribution of interesting patients, partnering on research, and more. Perhaps I did it for selfish reasons, to create a legacy that would live on as long as my trainees carried their work forward, then passing it on to progeny of their own. I often hope that even after everything else I've been able to do is forgotten, the legacy of my trainees and associates will endure and remain relevant. I feel paternally toward them, and I am delighted that so many have become leaders in the world of vascular surgery. There you have it, the six fundamentals that compose the medical jungle, a book about the stories, principles, and philosophies that helped me build my own success and hopefully help in shaping the future success of others. My mission in this book is to guide anyone in or out of medicine to achieve prominence and excellence by proving that they too can thrive in a high-performance field that may sometimes feel like a swimming pool full of sharks. My hope is that any physician or professional will have the courage to go against the grain themselves in whatever way serves their cause best. Perhaps someone else will be inspired by my example to push forward, even in an unpopular crusade. I always tell young people to choose a topic within their specialty that isn't attractive. something off the beaten path that hasn't been done before, or that folks think can't be done. It might seem as if you're going in the wrong direction, and you might experience pushback as I did. But you have to persevere. I think of Winston Churchill when he proclaimed, "Never, never, 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 never give up." That's pretty much been my motto, not accepting defeat, even when defeat loomed before me. In the end, the lessons ahead speak to the traits of success: a high energy level, persistence, hard work, building a team, and of course, just plain luck. Frank J. Veith, March 2022.